I want you to imagine a scenario where you're meeting with a potential client and they start hitting you with objections. Now, many times in sales training and when we talk about all kinds of sales tips and all the thought leaders out there, many of us have been guilty of telling you how to respond to that. Now, that's an important discussion to have. But today, we're going to have a much higher level discussion. We're going to talk about how to create objection-resistant conversations in the first place so that we can deal with it on the front end and we can lower the probability of you facing as many objections as you've been facing. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the Your Sales Playbook blog and your host for the Sales Playbook podcast. I've personally trained over 10,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so here we are. It's now the third week in January, third week into this like brand new year. And it's actually a really dangerous week for a lot of people. And the reason why it's like such a dangerous week, because it's right about now that you see the average person completely abandoning their New Year's resolutions and their goals and things like that. I know that certainly at the gyms, you're seeing a lot less people there already, and it's only 3 weeks into the year. So my advice to you before we get into this whole thing with questioning and all that is, stick with it, right? I mean, great things come to those who have the patience to continue working at it. But the other thing too, if you don't mind me suggesting, is don't be afraid to ask for help. I think that as sales professionals, that is one of the most dangerous qualities that we have, if you would even call it a quality. I mean, we're just so like independent and we're go-getters and type A's that we think it's a sign of weakness to ask someone else for help. So I actually have a free resource for you, and I'm hoping that you take full advantage of it. I have a free guide that I put together on hiring a sales coach, because I'm sure those of you who have ever like thought about it or kind of looked into it, you would agree that there are a lot of people out there who are doing the whole coaching thing. A lot of people out there also calling themselves a coach, but you know, they're not necessarily a coach. And how the heck do you make the right choice? You work hard for your money. You want to make the right decision. Here we are. We're a few weeks into this new year. You want to kick ass this year. But how do you make the right choice? So what I did was I put together this guide, and it shows you even the questions that you should be asking a potential coach, the things that you should be considering in your decision. So if you'd like to snatch a free copy, hoping you'll take full advantage, and you'll go to yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. yoursalesplaybook.com/coaching. So with that, let's get into this whole idea of objections, right? And I know that I've been really guilty of this whole thing of talking about getting objections. And well, if somebody says this to you, here are some ways that you can respond to it. Somebody's pushing back, and they're telling you your price is too high, follow these 7, 8, 9 steps and all that. And my excuse for doing that in the past was this, is that, you know, I tried to be kind of like the anti-establishment like thought leader in the sales space. There are a lot of things that are very typical in terms of advice and in terms of response. And I don't know if you guys see this or whatever, but like I'm actually like annoyed with you guys when I experience this, but it'll be over on LinkedIn and somebody's talking about an objection or something that went wrong or whatever it is, and there comes Mr. Sales Trainer or Miss Sales Trainer into the conversation. Well, you should have done these things and it's your fault. And it's like, here we are, we're back in the sixth grade and we're getting like our wrist slapped with the freaking ruler. And it's like obnoxious, because first of all, I just think that, like, I don't know, maybe they're being a bit of a judgmental prick, and they're, you know, they're sitting there, and meanwhile half of these people haven't sold anything in like years, and they're, you know, they're high and mighty and telling the sales rep they should have done this and that and the other thing. Now, unless this sales trainer can give them a time machine, there is not a damn thing that sales rep can do about those set of circumstances. They can't go back in time and fix it. So my position has always been, Well, let's at least show them how to respond, because here you are right now. You're experiencing these situations where you're getting a lot of objections. You might be in a negotiation right now, and you need some help. So that's been my position. But now I want to talk about what we can be doing on the front end to create a more objection-resistant conversation. And just one other thing. Let's make sure that we're all learning today from the same perspective. When I say objection, I'm not talking about you calling up on the phone, trying to secure an appointment, and people hitting you with those types of objections. I'm talking about the kind of objections that happen when you have your quote-unquote meeting with someone, or maybe after you've presented your solution, those types of objections. So really what it comes down to is this. I'm going to fast forward, and who is it, like Quentin Tarantino, whatever it is, that always like shows you like kind of like the end of the movie and then shows you like how they got there. I'm going to kind of do it like that, because really what it comes down to, if we want a more objection-resistant type of conversation, we need to obviously, and feel free to say duh to any of these things, but we obviously want to create a better comfort level with people. Now, in order for them to have a better comfort level with us, and it's two-way street, we have to have it with them, they have to have it with us. In order for them to have that comfort level with us, we really have to have better communication with them. And in order to have better communication, it's really going to come down to, you ready for this? I feel like I should have a drum roll. We need to be asking better questions. So at the heart of these, I'm guessing it's six ideas that I have for you, you're going to see that it all keeps coming back to the quality of the questions that you're asking. They can dramatically impact this whole like objection thing and these meetings like going out of your control. So having said that, now that I've set it up, let's get down to business. The first one, we're not going to spend a ton of time on. The other ones, we will. So the very first thing that we're going to want to do is we want to make sure that we're qualifying better and often. And I think many times, yeah, you know that you're supposed to qualify prospects, right? You know that. But I think sometimes we're a little hesitant. And we just don't want to push it. We don't want to make them mad or like we're being judgmental. And here's, first of all, the philosophy that I like to operate under. And the first philosophy is this. I mean, I like to understand that people are judging me, right? I mean, you're judging me right now, listening, right? And if we were in a situation where you were considering hiring me as your coach or hiring me to come in and train your team, you're going to judge me. That's understood. But what I want you to understand, and this isn't me being arrogant or kind of like acting like a diva here or whatever the hell you want to like label it as, you need to understand that I'm going to judge you back. And I want to say that again. I want you to understand that I'm going to judge you back. Now let's stop making it about me. Let's bring it back over to you. I want you to understand that you are allowed to judge others back. And I think many times we're sitting here thinking that this is solely, the decision rests solely with the prospect or their team or their boss, however you want to put it. But you need to understand that's part of the equation. You are allowed to decide if they are the right fit for you. Now, the thing of it is, that doesn't, and by the way, that doesn't mean we go running around being arrogant and snobby and you know, acting like we are God's gift to whatever, right? Like, I'm God's gift to training. I am your only choice. No. That's how you piss off a lot of people, have skinny kids. But what it means is that you really can't be afraid to work your process and making sure that they are right for you. And, you know, when it comes to qualifying a potential client, and just in general that the questions that you're asking, you ready for this? You want your bad news early. And if you're not driving in the car, I want you to write that down. Get your bad news early, because you know what? I love bad news early. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not as good as like good news early or great news anytime in the sales process. But the earlier I can get the screw you from you or to have you tell me to go take a hike, the better. Because if you think about it, how many times have we gone through a sales process and we have gone through all these different steps? We've had all these meetings and back and forth, and we've done prototypes and proposals and all these things. Not to mention, how about, I mean, sorry to sound like a lightweight, how about just like the hope that we put in it? Like we thought we had this opportunity, and it never really was a solid opportunity. So to me, if I'm going to get bad news from you, I want it as early as possible. If I am going to come to a conclusion that is bad news for me, which means that, you know what, I'm not going to have your business, I want it as early in the process as I can so that I'm not tying up as many resources as I would be if, like, this thing dragged on. So what does this particular step come down to? You want to be asking better qualifying questions, not just once, not just when you're on the phone with them, not just in that initial meeting, but you want to always be qualifying. So that is the very first thing. Again, you will see that each and every one of these little suggestions that I have for you today comes down to this. You need to be asking better questions. And I want to open your eyes, and I want you to understand that we're not just asking better questions to get information. In this context, we're asking better questions to make sure it's a really good fit. You know, we're not interested in really a one-night stand here. What we're really interested in is building a marriage with these clients because, you know, to me, it saves a lot of work. It's not easy having to go through an entire sales process, and we don't want to keep repeating that simply to replace business. We want to be growing this business, and it becomes easier that way when we are going more for the marriage. So that is number one. Number two, we want now if we, and again, I just want to remind you what we're doing here. It was we're talking about how do we create a more objection-resistant conversation. Well, if we're talking with the right people, so to speak, and the right, and we're in front of the right opportunity, that dramatically lowers the amount of objections. Because if we're not right for someone and we're talking with them, well, there's going to be objections. So now the second thing is getting the right people into the conversation. Again, you might be inclined to say, duh, until you hear me define who I think are the right people. So we were taught from the beginning of time, and those of you who have been following me for a while and have listened to these podcasts, you are not going to be shocked at what I'm about to say. We were taught from the beginning of time that you get the highest level of decision maker into that room. I don't disagree with that, by the way. I think that the highest level of decision maker, they're awesome when it comes to getting approval, to helping us remove internal speed bumps and internal politics, certainly for signing checks, but typically they're really removed from the day-to-day. That's no disrespect, but when you're at the 30,000-foot level, you have forgotten what it's like to be in the trenches. I don't care if periodically they're going out on visits and they're going to customer sites and involved in projects. Typically, when they're at that sea level, they're usually removed from the day-to-day. So what we want instead is we want all of the stakeholders in this solution. So, you know, I mean, the reason why we want to do that, by the way, is we want to be able to get more accurate information. Because when we have more accurate information, we can present a more accurate solution. And when we present a more accurate solution, what are we doing? We're creating a more objection-resistant conversation because we're more on the money, we're more spot on. People are saying, wow, you understood us. So there's going to be less pushback. Also, stakeholders can set leadership straight from the perspective of being in the trenches. I have experienced this playing out right in front of me, and I know that it's also happened when I've left the room. So in front of me, I've had people, when I've been in a meeting, and they were very nice to me, but they just ultimately at the very high level, maybe they weren't seeing the need for it. And let's be honest, many times training, it's like, well, it's kind of like a, you know, something that, well, maybe we can use. A lot of people don't really see the value in it, and I get that. And many times they're looking at it as just 25 grand or 10 grand or 100 grand or whatever the number is, more of an expense. So I've seen people right in front of me very respectfully say, I think you're misunderstanding this. You've heard from Paul. I want you to hear from me. We need him. We are getting our asses kicked on a regular basis. You don't understand it, but the process that Paul laid out is exactly what we need because of A, B, and C. Now, if I didn't have those people that were right there on the quote on front line involved, I would have lost those deals. But I also know that there's been times where it's happened when I wasn't in the room because they didn't want to go and, you know, kind of, you know, get into their brawl in front of me because I'm like the outsider. So I think it's very, very important that you have all of the stakeholders involved. Also, too, I think when you get the right people into the conversation, it's going to expedite the entire process. But, you know, right about now, you might be thinking, okay, Castain, how the heck do we get the right people into the conversation? Well, it comes down to the questions, right? We need to either ask for that access. Now, you, again, this is, I mean, we might as well, like, kind of, like, subtitle this whole thing, like, duh, today. Like, that should be the name of today's podcast, duh. Because you're going to want to say duh to half these things I'm saying. But when we talk about asking for access, your gut level response to that should be, I would actually be disappointed in you if you didn't say to me, of course, Castain, come on. Like, you know, seriously, like, way to baby me. Like, thank you. You're making me feel like I'm 11 again. Right? I even knew this as an 11-year-old. But then when the follow-up question comes, okay, you know you should be doing this. Are you asking for that access? A lot of people, again, feel like, oh, well, maybe, you know, and they're not, by the way. And for some, it's like, well, I feel funny doing it, and I don't want to, like, push my luck and everything. Well, first of all, it's a matter of how you ask for that access. I mean, if you ask for it in a way that you're making your contact feel like they're just some low-level dude or dudette that parks the cars, well, then I guess, like, you know, I'm with you. Don't ask because you're making somebody feel like an asshole. But if you're asking in a very professional way, and maybe even explaining to them how important it is from their perspective to be able to make a more informed decision, and you know the right way to ask, it makes a big difference. But there's another thing that you need to keep in mind. Sometimes on the first attempt, people are not going to grant you the access because they just don't know you, right? And that's okay. That's to be expected. So make sure, just like we're qualifying, make sure that you ask for that access often. Like, many times what I say is, okay, when you set the appointment, you should be asking who else besides yourself should join us, and even go a step further and help them think of the appropriate people that really should be in that meeting. So what I might say, who else besides yourself should join us in this training conversation? Maybe a few of your reps. Perhaps some of your local regional sales managers should come join us. What are your thoughts? Now, again, if you notice how I said that, it was respectful. I didn't say, you know, because let's be honest. I mean, you're worthless as shit, and I really don't need to talk to you. I want to talk to the people who actually do work, right? I'm not saying that. I'm being very respectful. But you need to ask often. So at the end of your meetings, get in the habit of saying, who else besides yourself should join us on the next conversation? You know, maybe for the next one, we had a lot of conversations today that I think maybe some of your regional sales managers could offer some input. And suggesting different groups of people in the organization who might be able to offer that input. But also, there's another thing that you can do. And if people aren't allowing you the access, and I'm not trying to be sneaky, some of you are going to, like, maybe be a little against what I'm about to propose, but it is what it is. In those cases, I'm going to make sure that I'm asking some questions that I know they can't answer, that I know for a fact that their regional sales manager is going to be more qualified to answer that question. Certainly the people in the trenches, their sales reps, are going to be more qualified to answer. If it's a financial question, then I'm going to ask them questions that I know that their accounting team are going to be more qualified to answer. If it's something about maybe the direction of the company or some things that are going more into, you know, 18 months down the line or whatever it is, it might be something that the CEO is better qualified to answer. It really depends, but don't be afraid to ask. And remember, we're not saying, hey, this has to be a brawl. It just means that you and I have to have the balls to ask people. So don't ever be in a situation in sales where you're not getting a result because you didn't show up and at least attempt to play the game. See, to me, that's unacceptable, by the way. That's inexcusable. But if you tell me, well, I tried and they said no, okay, then let's talk about how we can get them to say yes next time, right? And we learn and we get stronger from the experience. But you don't want to be missing out on things in sales because you didn't show up and play the game. So make a note to self on that one. So far, we've talked about qualifying better and often. Well, the way that we do that is by asking better qualifying questions. Now we're talking about getting the right people into the conversation. I told you who those right people are, making sure that we get the stakeholders into these conversations. And then it really comes down to asking for that access and knowing how to ask for it, and even asking the questions that you know that they can't just answer, that they need to get these people in the room. So now they're suddenly realizing that this isn't just a power play on your part, that you need the information. Now, the reason why this contributes to a more objection-resistant discussion, because now we're getting accurate information, which is going to help us present a more appropriate solution. So now the third thing that I want you to think about is we really need, if we want this objection-resistant dialogue with our prospects, we need to think about creating a process-friendly environment. A process-friendly environment. Now, if you're like me and you know, you're a salesperson forever, you hear words like process, and right away you're like, oh, right? Because we don't like a lot of structure in sales, right? We're kind of free spirits. We're like wild animals. We love to run wild and do our thing. Please don't be put off by the word process. What I'm talking about here is when I say a process-friendly environment, my definition of that is an environment where you can do your due diligence and they can do theirs. Isn't that fair? That you can do your due diligence and they can do theirs. What we're really talking about here, too, is establishing a collaborative environment. Before you're ever working together, one where they're allowed to ask you questions, you're allowed to ask them questions, and together you arrive at a place that is either going to say, we're going to be working together, or you know what? We're going to respectfully part as friends. But we need to be able to work the process. Now, I think what happens here is sometimes, again, because we don't want to push our luck, and that day we kind of leave our balls at home, we allow people to say things to us like, you know what, Paul, we know exactly what we want. Save all your questions. We need, you know, you to come in and do this, and we need a coaching program for that, and we need you to write content for this or whatever it is. And my big response and my philosophy when it comes to that, it's kind of dramatic. And this week on my blog, I talked all about it over on yoursalesplaybook.com. I asked the question, would you trust a doctor who allowed you to self-diagnose? So I want you to imagine something. This is me beating the shit out of a point so that you really own it, because I want you to understand how asinine it is to allow a potential client to just tell you they know what they want without you working the process. What I want you to imagine, going to a doctor and or anybody going to a doctor and saying, you know what, put away the stethoscope, stop with the questions, You know, cancel the blood work and the cardiogram and the stress test and just give me your best price for a triple bypass. And you know what, Doc? Sharpen that pencil because I got to take three bids. How freaking, like, idiotic would that be? And what I really want to do to beat up the point, would you trust a doctor that allowed that to happen? And I'm hoping you say no. Because I don't know, like, I'm thinking of a word and it begins with an M and it ends with an E. Let's play a game. What's the word that Uncle Paul is thinking of? Wait a minute. Wait for it. I believe it's called malpractice. Now, you might be thinking, Paul, being a doctor is a little bit different. I maintain that it's not. I think there's such a thing as sales malpractice. And I think we have to be very much aware of that. That is irresponsible for us not to work our process. Now, I'm not saying that when somebody knows what they want, that we don't listen to them. But still, you need to ask your questions. So, you know, and you can't be intimidated. And I think, you know, I was thinking back on something. And I was thinking back on my thought process about things throughout my career that upset me the most. Things like going back years and years and years ago that upset me the most. And again, these go back many years because since then, I really found my balls. I really did. Back in the day, you know, when I would feel horrible if I allowed somebody to do something that I knew in good conscience was the wrong thing to do, but they just overpowered me and I didn't speak up and I didn't just lay it out to them. And this is one of those things. I've thought back to those where people have said to me, don't worry, like they're doing you a favor. Have you ever had that one where somebody's like, this is going to be the easiest sales call in the world. I know exactly what I want. First of all, it's not going to be the easiest sales call in the world. I can promise you it's not. Many times it's somebody being deceptive and they're giving you a false sense of something. Later on, they're going to hit you on some negotiation or whatever. But even still, even if they're being completely forthright, you know, thinking you know what you want and actually knowing what you want are two different things. And the only way for us to really confirm that is by going through the process. Now, you know, very quickly, there's a story that I love to tell. In fact, it is a Paulism. It is something that I just, like, beat the crap out of. There is an old story about David Ogilvy. And by the way, I mean, you know, I that was one of the guys that, like, when I first started in business, like, I read his biography and, you know, what was it, Confessions of, you know, an Ad Man or whatever the heck it was. I'm sorry, it's a long time ago. But there was, like, two books I remember reading on him. And what I really admired about him, unless he's just, like, glamorizing the whole thing and you know, taking a lot of, like, literary license. He just, like, right out of the gate, when they were a small agency, he showed up to the party like they were the hot chick and just carried themselves as such so that people would respect them. And he used to tell this story about, like, the first major piece of business that they packed up their bags and walked away from arrogantly, not even in a nice fashion, arrogantly. He went into this meeting and this, I don't remember how the story was, like, if he was in front of the other vendors, I think he was, or potential vendors, and this, like, purchasing person or this marketing person or whatever has these people in the room and says, this is how this whole meeting will go down today. You will, at the beginning of your allotted time, I shall ring a bell, and you will have 3 minutes to present your pitch. At the end, I will ring the bell, and you will be done. And then we will give you our decision at a later date. So, again, he went through this and he said, you know, at the end of your allotted time, I will ring the bell and you will be done. So then he said, before we begin, does anyone have any thoughts or any questions? David Ogilvy stood up and said, ring the bell. And he walked out of the room. He wasn't going to play by those rules. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be David Ogilvy and you have to go and have fights and brawls with people. I'm just saying that I don't even know you, but I know one thing about myself. I'm not going to represent a company that I don't believe in. And in order for me to believe in something, I have to feel that we're an awesome company, awesome service, awesome solution, awesome widget. You know the deal. So if you truly believe that you're awesome, awesome comes with certain rights. And one of the rights is that if something isn't right for you, you can respectfully close your book and walk away from it. Again, this is part of the qualifying, isn't it? If somebody is not going to allow you to work your process and be responsible, and they're not going to allow you to do that, and this is now the courtship, what do you think that marriage is going to be like? To me, this also falls under the heading, let's get our bad news early. This is bad news. So you absolutely want to insist that people allow you to work your process. So when somebody tells you we know exactly what we want, my way of doing it is, you know, I will kind of engage with them in a way that has them lower their guard. Because when they're making a statement like that, they're going to have their guard up. They're expecting any reputable sales rep to fight them on that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, sure, tell me what it is that you want, and I'm going to let them go through it. And then at the end of it, I'm going to say, just so you know, I am going to have a few questions. So here are my questions. And I'm just going to ask the damn questions I was going to ask anyway. So, you know, basically, it appears that I'm going along with it, but I'm still going to be a professional because I just need to make sure. So that is the third thing. So, and again, I want you to understand, how does that make it a more objection-resistant environment? Well, because now you're allowed to ask questions. Now you're able to be a professional. And I can't possibly know what you want until I ask the right questions. So that's going to help reduce objections later on. So now that brings us to number four. And I kind of gave it away a second ago, right? There I go again, spoilers. It's like when I talk to people about The Walking Dead and they missed a damn episode. I'm the asshat that just gave them a spoiler. And I was, oh, damn it, man. Like, I got to keep my mouth shut. But anyway, here I go with the spoilers again. But number four is, if you want a more objection-resistant dialogue with people, you need to ask better questions. I'm going to say that again. If you want a more objection-resistant, notice I didn't say objection-free. As soon as you find that world, come get me. I want to live there with you. Because, and I'm going to tell you right now, if I figure that one out, I'm going to be really freaking wealthy. Because I don't know that we figured out a way to make it completely objection-free. Anybody telling you that? I don't know. I'm thinking they're full of shit. But I think we could make it more objection-resistant, less likely to push back. So that's a great statement to make. But what does that mean? What does that mean, asking better questions? What are these better questions that Uncle Paul like keeps talking about? Well, one of them is, you know, or really what not to do. I think sometimes in our meetings we're guilty of spending a lot of time on spec-related questions, talking about size and colors and quantities and things like that. And people are not going to get excited over that shit. They're just not going to say, oh my gosh, thank God you came in here to ask me how many I want. It's necessary to the process. Yes, you have to know specs. But if when you look at the types of questions and the percentage of each type of question you're asking, if you're spending an inordinate amount of time on spec-related questions, I think that is a major thing right there that we solve for you. And that's why you're getting more objections, right? So that's the first thing. Just be very conscious and mindful of how many spec-related questions or how much of a focus on that overall amount of time you have with the potential client is being spent on the specs. Next, the questions that you're asking, yes, you should look for the pain. But haven't you been beaten to death with that premise, like, from the beginning of, like, sales for you, like, day one? Look for the pain. The purpose of the questions is to look for the pain. Yes, there's no doubt. You should be looking for the pain. But I'm also here to tell you, you better be looking for opportunity too. Pain doesn't exist in every scenario. And I'll also tell you, preferably, you're going to find pain. Because removing pain or the potential of pain coming into the equation is the number one catalyst for change. Right? That's what gets people off their ass. Making something painful go away. But if you can't find pain, and that's all you're focusing your questioning on, you leave with empty pockets. And I'm also here to tell you, the potential client misses out too, because they leave without your solution. So you also want to be looking for opportunity. So when you look at your questions, if you have questions to uncover pain, potential pain, existing pain now, past pain, future pain, make sure that you're also probing for opportunity, because that could be very, very important. Also, you want to make sure that you have some questions there that make people emotional. Now, when I say emotional, that doesn't necessarily mean crying. I'm not saying that like we have to be like, you know, Oprah or like, you know, like the old Barbara Walters show trying to get people to cry. I'm not saying that. But you have to understand that one of the qualities of an awesome question is the ability to jumpstart somebody's emotion. And if we can't jumpstart somebody's emotions, it's very easy for them to either cling to the status quo, just stay with the solution that they know, or default to price. It's a lot easier. So we want to get them excited. And great questions can do that. Also, in this whole idea of asking better questions, a great question is going to lead someone on a path of self-discovery. And the reason why that helps lead to a more objection-resistant conversation is because if I am convincing you and saying something to you, it's a lot easier to you for you to object to that and push back and give me a hard time and be skeptical and poke holes in my argument, no matter how good I am at making that argument. But if you say it yourself, how do you fight that? How do you push back? If I'm using your exact words and phrases, how can you possibly push back on that which you said to be true? So I want you to think about that. Also, questions need to be in your arsenal that get all of the stakeholders talking, and not just the extroverts, not just the alpha males in the room. To me, you know, this is a big mistake that people make in meetings, especially when you're selling to a committee or a group of people. We look at the people either by title and we focus on them, or more often than not, the loudest person in the room, the most vocal people in the room. I will tell you that many times your real person that you need to convince is that person being quiet, because for whatever reason, they're being silent. And it might be just that group dynamic that, you know, you're in. I'm sure you've experienced that too, where in your particular, on your particular team, when you get together, there are people who are more vocal than you. And there's probably other scenarios where you're more vocal than other people. Or you might just be a flat out introvert. That can happen too. I mean, I've met some people and I've been in some meetings where the most quietest person in the room was actually the most powerful person in the room, but they were more of an introvert. I've also had situations, in the spirit of bragging a little bit, because I kind of wish I was smart enough to have been doing this all along, but a little later in my career, where I kind of made that realization, hey, wait a minute, you know, I kind of thought that Jane was kind of leading this whole thing, but the real person I needed to be convincing was that person keeping their mouth shut. I've had people follow me out into the parking lot afterwards, or follow me out into the hall and say, I just want to thank you. Nobody ever asked for my input here, and you really did that. So I think that also helps to eliminate some of the objections, especially when you really look at what you're doing. You're not only getting information and getting input, you're validating people on the team. And you know how I always say, everyone has a story and wants to be heard. My argument is most people aren't heard in day-to-day life. And I will tell you, that's true for the meetings you're going to. So you need to be the person who, through their actions and through their questions and through good facilitation skills, basically says to someone, you are important enough that I want to hear what you have to say. You matter. We want to validate those people. So that's why really, really good questions are important. But this last one, boy, I'll tell you, easier said than done for a lot of people. But it's something, again, we talked about earlier, kind of finding your balls. This is one of those scenarios. When we talk about asking better questions, sometimes you've got to be willing to ask the tougher questions and ask the questions that kind of, call attention to the quote-unquote elephant in the room. And many times we avoid things because we don't want to rock the boat. I've had people tell me, I'm just going to tell you, Paul, we definitely, we don't want to talk about this one particular thing. And they've told me that right in the meeting. This is going to be off limits. We can't talk about it. And right there in the beginning of the meeting, and I tell them very, very politely, we actually do need to talk about it. This impacts sales. I'm not trying to bring up like painful things here so we can have a group therapy session. But one of the reasons why you hire me is because I have the balls to ask you those questions, and I'm going to teach you how to have the balls to ask those questions to your potential clients. But please understand that we're not having this meeting unless we can address that. That is a very big part of why we right now have this challenge in front of us, because we're not talking about that. It needs to be discussed. It needs to be talked about today. And again, a lot of that is in the packaging and the delivery of that message. But now, I want you to think about this, right? That was number four, asking better questions. Because, see, if I'm asking better questions, yes, I'm getting better quality information, right? And we're having better communication, because we talked about that before. We need better communication. Well, in order to get the better communication, right, the better questions, but it goes deeper than that. And that is where item number five comes in. If I'm asking better questions, aren't I developing a stronger, higher level rapport and credibility with you? And also, too, the more comfortable that you are with me, the more you're going to share with me. Do you agree with that statement? And don't answer, because again, like, you're by yourself then. That'd be kind of odd. But seriously, the more comfortable you are with me and the more I am establishing credibility with you by asking you the questions other people didn't have the balls to ask you, better quality questions, the questions that are getting you opening up to me, getting you to like self-acknowledge, oh my gosh, wow, like I didn't realize it. You didn't even have to tell me. That's like I kind of arrived there on my own. The more that's happening, aren't you going to be more willing as we go along to share more with me and maybe even like more intimate details of your challenges? So that's very, very important. But also, too, I think when I'm asking you better questions, it shows that I value your time and that I'm taking you seriously. And if my questions are awesome, again, I'm going to have that credibility. And if I have that credibility with you, isn't that something like credibility and rapport that contributes to a more of an objection-resistant conversation? Again, I think the big problem with rapport, if we kind of play like word association, if I say to you, tell me like what you think of when I say it's important to establish rapport, most of you are going to say things like, well, finding things that we have in common and looking around the office for things like you can comment on. Oh, great. Are those your children? Right? Yeah, they're ugly as shit, but those are your children. No, I'm kidding. I mean, you're looking for the, oh, you like to play golf. Oh, wow. There's a guitar in your office. I play guitar too. Blah, 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 blah. Right? That, I don't want to discount that, but I'm here to tell you, do you really think that you're the only person who does that? I also want to say to you that in many cases, and I've spoken with buyers, we've had things that we've done through Castain training systems where we've had roundtables of buyers so that we could learn about buyer behavior and things like that. Many of them have said, we see right through it. It comes across as just really, really fake and shallow, and just like somebody's just checking a box on some idiotic sales process. I'm here to tell you that asking better questions will do more for you than making those comments about the kids and the fish on the wall and the trophies and all that. I'm not saying don't show an interest in that stuff. I'm just saying that if you really want to show up differently, because that's what this is about. You and I need to show up differently. Start putting a little bit more artillery fire on crafting a better question. So now, if I'm asking better questions and I am developing that rapport and credibility, well, you know, this is going to move us to item number six. So let me just kind of recap a little bit. If I'm going to qualify better and I'm going to get the right people into the conversation, we establish a process-friendly environment where I can ask you questions and you can ask me questions and none of this, I already know what I want shit. Now I start asking you better questions and getting better quality answers. Now at the same time, I'm developing a higher level of rapport and credibility. Now I can present a more suitable solution and make a greater impact with you. Let me say it again. Now I can present a more suitable solution and make a greater impact. So every one of these steps that I mentioned today comes down to one thing. They all have one thing in common. If you want a more objection-free discussion, instead of now handling objections as they happen, yes, you should be versed on that. You should develop reflexes for that. But how about creating more conversations that result in less objections? My advice to you is simple, man. You need to be asking better questions. That's what's going to do it for you. And, you know, I just want to remind you, as we wrap up, this is going somewhere. We're going to actually, this week, I mean, like the deadline is here. We're going to be talking all about this because right now you might be, I am completely bought in, Paul. I'm going to look at my questions. And, man, I never really thought about questions and from that perspective. But you might be getting to the point now where you're like, okay, but how do I ask that better question? Could you give me some examples of some better questions, Paul? Well, I'm going to be helping you with that. This week, on January 26th, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, we're going to have our webinar. And how do you like this title? It's called How to Ask Awesome Sales Questions. And, you know, what we're going to do, in fact, there's the several things I'm going to be sharing. I mean, first of all, we're going to talk about six questioning mistakes that I'm telling you they're costing you opportunities and they're costing you business. So we're going to talk about them. Obviously, I'm going to tell you how to avoid that stuff. We're going to talk about how to create an arsenal of, wait for it, awesome questions. My definition of an awesome question, by the way, are the questions that your competitors fail to ask. I'm going to take you through five different types of questions, and I'm going to give you lots and lots of examples. Now, right about now, you might be thinking, oh, yeah, I know what you're going to do. You're going to talk about all these questions, like you're going to tell me to look for the pain, and then you're going to be talking about, like, open-ended questions and closed probes and all that. I'm not doing any of that shit. I'm just going to tell you right now. To me, you don't need to pay me $99 for a webinar for that. And again, if my job is to like help you show up differently, you're not going to show up differently by asking the same questions that your competitors are. So I'm not going to do that. To me, if that's what you want to learn about, save you money, go to Google and like sort through like, I don't know, about 6 million results. Because every sales trainer, the minute they start talking about questions, they act like we've never heard that before, and they start talking about, hey, you got to ask open-ended questions and closed questions. I'm not doing it. In fact, you can make me all kinds of offers. I refuse to do it. I don't want to teach that shit. I just don't. Anyway, that's me being a little moody and temperamental. We're going to talk about the one type of question that actually helps you take control. I mean, isn't it important that we have a conversation where we're taking control without being controlling? And could that help you create a more objection-resistant conversation by taking control and keeping it away from like those trouble areas and focusing on the things that like really matter to make a well-informed decision? In fact, do you guys ever have situations like that where you lose a deal for the wrong reason? Like they made it like a shitty decision. They just think they did not understand truly what made you different and more valuable to them. And it was almost like they like just like randomly picked a name out of a hat and you lost. So that control and establishing that control will keep you away from more of those types of situations. We're going to talk about the one type of question that dramatically improves your credibility. We talked about that today. Great questions improve your credibility. But, you know, what's an example of a question that would improve your credibility? There's one particular type of question that works like a charm, and I'm going to show you that. Also, we're going to talk about three questioning flight plans that are going to help you get better results. So what do I mean by flight plans? I mean scenarios where maybe you're meeting with a potential client. Maybe you're meeting with an existing client. What should those questions look like? What would that flight plan look like? Where would you start? Where would you end? What kind of questions should be sandwiched in between? We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how to create a conversation and not an interrogation. And I was thinking about this the other day. I was running the New Jersey office for a major franchising company years ago. And these people came in from the bank that we did business with. And it was like they just left like a spin selling class or something like that. And this, like, they came in and it was almost like, yeah, we'll practice on, you know, Paul's team. And they come in and they're asking me these questions, and it's just like I felt like at several points, like, do I need my attorney here? It's like, this is like an interrogation. This is like idiotic. And it was actually aggravating me. And in getting aggravated, I wasn't giving them good quality answers. I know I didn't help them. They weren't helping me. And ultimately, I cut the meeting short. I was very polite about it, but I don't think I gave them 10 minutes. So, you know, I mean, we all kind of lost there. But if you'd like to learn more, and I'm hoping that you do, folks, because this to me is really the most important part of the process. The questions you ask impact so many different areas of the sales process. It is very, very important that you're the one showing up with kick-ass questions. So if you'd like to learn more, would you visit yoursalesplaybook.com/question? Let me say it again, yoursalesplaybook.com/question. I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com, and I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Visit us at www.yoursalesplaybook.com.